interim judiciary?
Would be happy to have that conversation. I don't think we get it done by this year. I think we need to do a mandatory fine for basically everything and make it go back to where it was. I don't think we get that done this quickly.
Yeah. So I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but not really, is on Wednesday, February 12th, is the Executive Offices of Criminal Justice Appropriations Subcommittee is meeting, and I am having to meet, I have a 15-minute presentation to talk about UPC, what we do. Does the council want me to bring this surcharge issue up with them, maybe even going so far as to highlighting, here's just one example of where we're at, or do I want me to just simply leave my comments to what UPC is and what we're doing?
50, like 5-0 or 1-5? How many minutes?
15, 1-5.
I don't think this.
Don't think so? Okay.
They just want you to report on the activities, what it is that you've done.
Yeah, what we're doing. In this came about as a meeting that I had with Alex Wilson yesterday that, again, I'm going to talk about, but he told me that I need to be there to present because he is pushing.
Is this the same, like you did last year?
Yeah. But what they're now looking for is almost a justification as to why we should continue to receive our funding. So in addition to the number of trainings we do and prosecutors, what I'm going to report on is, and what I'm going to ask the group here in just a minute is how many of your attorneys in your offices actually come to UPC trainings? What percentage of their CLE do they get from UPC? I'm prepared to outline our costs, you know, what it costs to go to a UPC conference versus going to, like, say, NDAA, which really is the next agency out there that does criminal training. And so that's what he wanted me to talk about. I just wanted to make sure to see if you wanted me to talk about the surcharge or not.
Don't you think, though, that he at least ought to put a bug in there, just not for UPC, but for all of the agencies that are receiving?
Oh, we can raise it, but 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah, just enough to
pique
their curiosity.
Yeah, I think we should raise it and say it's something we'd like to address in interim.
Yeah, start the conversation.
Okay.
What time is it at?
He didn't give me a time. I'm the first on the agenda, so I'm the first block that day, so whatever time they start. So probably, probably first thing in the morning.
So you said you're going to send out just that questionnaire, how many minutes?
Yeah, well, I'm going to ask this group here, but yes, I'm going to send out a questionnaire. I mentioned it briefly to Marilyn. We're going to work with the UPAA. I figured I would get a better response from the admin staff. So what the question will be is, how many prosecutors are in the office? Because he was a little frustrated that I didn't know that. And I said, if they don't email me and say somebody's left or who's been hired, but find that out. The number of the attorneys in the office that come to UPC trainings, and then what's the percentage of the CLE that their attorneys get from UPC trainings? And he said, do you think it'll be 50%? I said, I bet it's going to be 95 to, 98%. And he said, and he kind of looked at me askance, and I said, no, really, we're the best deal in town. I mean, that's what we're designed to do. Statutorily, so I know there are some that don't come to UPC training, and I made sure I excluded the AG's office, because they do their own in-house training, and Salt Lake is doing some training, but still, you guys are sending people to UPC. So I'm going to send that out probably next week, have your support staff respond to that and try to get as much information as I can. Again, it's just to justify.
I can tell you right now.
Oh, 100%?
Well, I mean, Gary, the city attorney, doesn't come to UPC.
Right.
The rest of us.
But I'm looking for prosecutors. Is Gary a prosecutor?
No.
Yeah.
The civil conference counts, right?
Yeah. He usually goes to UMA.
Yeah, he goes to UMA. So yeah, that's why I wasn't going to ask about civil, because I didn't want to muddy the waters with that, because I don't track the civil side. I don't even have a very good email list. And maybe I should. I don't know.
It would be 4-for-4 and 95%.
Yeah.
For a larger office, it might be easier for us to answer accurately around the time that we're recording CLEs for the office.
Yeah.
So that there's actually a record of what's coming from UPC versus other sources.
Oh, that's true.
Right now with 200 attorneys.
Yeah. Well, and Alex understands that, so I guess it would be more, just give me your best guess right now, but that is a good idea, is to send it out maybe in July after the reporting period when they've got...
Would you have last year's?
Oh, they'd have to pull it.
I don't know if we keep a copy of what we, because we pay the registration of the CLE fees. I don't know if we keep a copy of that or we just forward it to the bar. But if we knew ahead of time, we could use that information.
Yeah. And every attorney has the ability through their bar account to print what they've reported to the bar for CLE.
Right.
Like I could get a copy of it right now off the bar's website.
Right.
But getting every prosecutor in the state to do that and report it is.
And that's why I was saying, you know, working through UPA, because I think they'd be in a better position either to know or, you know, go to their attorneys and say, I need this information. Would you agree, Kathy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason I say 95% is because all of our prosecutors still have a civil assignment, so they might go to
whatever.
But
that's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you think at some point they're going to ask why our fees are so low?
They could.
To the other options.
What would the other option? What do you mean by that?
To get your CLE credit.
Sorry.
What other options are there to get CLE?
Oh yeah, and so I'm actually preparing that, and so I started yesterday, going out and finding who else. If UPC were to go away, and that's leading into HB 10 that we're kind of getting to. Is identifying where else our prosecutors can go to get trained. NDA is the first logical choice, but their early bird is almost close to $700, $900 for, you know, you just register at the last minute, up to $1,400, all out of state except for one that's coming to Salt Lake late next fall. The bar does training, and they're cheap, $20. For 1 hour of CLE, but they don't focus really on criminal. When I looked at their calendar yesterday and what they've got posted, the only criminal-related CLE training that the bar's offering is an elder abuse, financial exploitation, and that's just one credit hour, you know, like the brown bagger. I know there's private ones out there. I haven't gotten that far, so I'm gonna be prepared to present that to the legislature. You know, if you do away with UPC, it's an unfunded mandate to each of the offices to find training elsewhere, and it's just not cost effective. Does that answer your question, Robert? Is that what you're getting at?
Well, I mean, mine was geared more towards increasing.
Increasing our fees?
Yeah, I understand. A larger office, that's more impactful, but. There are lots of different ways to handle that, where if you have 10 or more people, it's reduced. If 20 or more, it's reduced.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I'm sorry. I just misunderstood what you're saying. That would be a question for the council. I mean, and I addressed in here when I was talking about, when I met with Kimberly Schmeling from the AG's office about our budget. You know, we can raise our fees. We just have to get approval ahead of time. And if the legislature comes to us and says, well, we want you to raise your fees, what would the council's response be to that? I mean, how would you want me to respond to that? Sure, let's raise our fees, or no, we're pretty good right now.
Part of the argument is we want to incentivize prosecutors to attend these trainings because it helps them exercise their discretion in the highest ethical manner.
Right.
And that's what they want to encourage, not discourage.
Right.
It hits both ends of the spectrum. You know, the smaller offices, you know, they'll have to pay more, probably come up with it, but then you get to the large offices, and now you get that multiplying factor
of
what the impact's going to be on them. And,
right.
And you know, the mission of this, and it was to be funded through, you know, the surcharge. If they want to do a total philosophical change on that,
yeah.
I guess, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, for those that have been around, well, there's not very many that have been around for that long, but Marilyn, this is coming out wrong.
We'll just know this is a Bobism and we'll ignore it and move on.
Historically, UPC didn't even charge registration fees.
I wasn't around then.
You weren't around then?
No.
Okay. No. And then
Steve was.
I mean, because I wasn't going to say that either. Is, you know, going back and looking at the history is. I looked at Mark's notes, is they started just charging like $20 just to get people to come. I mean, it's easy to say you're not going to come when you haven't paid and then people don't show up. And so they were charging a nominal registration fee just to get people to come.
Well, so that, yeah, so they'd say, yeah, I'm going to register, I never mind.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then show up, and then we had to bump it all the way to 25 because then this bar started charging us administrative costs before the CLEs.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that was when we were flush with surcharge funds. You know, obviously now we're in a different situation. So I don't know, Robert, I guess maybe I would push back if the legislature says just keep increasing your fees.
Yeah, and I think that Jeff's response to that is, what is it that you want? You're yelling and screaming about, you know, prosecutors.
Yeah.
Are you concerned about whether they're doing their job? This is our focus. This is what it is we're trying to do. And
Right. Okay.
So let's see, we're at $135. That's what our proposal is. Right?
125. Yeah.
So that's a very large percentage of
was, oh, yeah.
The surcharge was flush. And we're also looking at, we have a 17% decrease in funds since 2009, mm-hmm. 12% since 2015. Mm-hmm. So about $100,000 difference.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, I was an econ major, but I don't remember the term for it. You have diminishing returns. If you raise that much more, in my view, you're going to have diminishing returns, no matter how high quality the training is.
Less people will come.
We're not a private firm. We're not flush with money. So
we're not trying to make a profit.
We're trying to make a profit. So we have to keep them pretty minimal.
Yeah.
Well, where are prosecutors going to go to get training?
Well, I mean, that's just it. You're
online. They're not coming to you. You only do so many online.
Yeah.
The training prosecutors is not a situation where you're going to earn more money like you would if you had training for private firms. Private firms can increase their income by having new training, doing new types of things. Prosecutors aren't start that way. We don't earn more money by having new expertise.
Well, I hope you're not trying to explain that to me because I know that.
but that's what Jeff's talking about. There's diminishing returns.
Yeah, we have no one to charge to increase.
I'm just talking about alternative solutions for the surcharge if that doesn't pan out.
Yeah.
And then it would be one of those where I think the offices would just look for the cheapest data in town. We don't care that you got to get your CLEs to maintain mm-hmm. your certification. They got this great new one coming to town that's on Wilson Estates. You'll get your CLE. We're not worried about whether it's prosecution.
Yeah, exactly. Whether it's, yeah. Well, so let me jump ahead to the bottom of page 5 in the packet that I gave you. So this is, I met yesterday with Alex Wilson at Ledge Affairs. And as I said, it sort of goes into that HB10, which is up above where us, CJC, and hundreds of other agencies are looking at being sunsetted, repealed in 2024. There's been, with Jeff and Will and others, that Representative Roberts, that
won't get you to retirement? You'll get it?
No, it won't get me. It'll get Ron to retirement. He's the only one in our office that'll get to retirement.
And I don't necessarily want to.
Yeah. But it's not so much, you know, that they want to repeal these boards. It's just they want to look at them and make sure that, you know, we can justify our existence. So when I met with Alex, this is one of the things that he was talking about, and be able to justify our existences, show that we are training, you know, the majority of prosecutors, were cost effective, you know, all of these things.
So CCJJ will be on that list too?
yeah. But then we talked about the surcharge, and he is tracking the decline in the surcharge. I mean, he says this is going to be an important issue for the legislature, is they get it that it's down. And what he shared with me, and I don't know if this is his opinion, if it's a personal opinion, an informed opinion, is when the legislature starts looking at the entities that are receiving the surcharge, they're going to prioritize in terms of importance. He says that UPC has a leg up in that we've been receiving a surcharge the longest. And then if we can show, you know, the value that we provide to state prosecutors, he thinks that will not ensure, but one, keep us on the list of those that receive the surcharge. He said what may happen is they'll look at the surcharge, they will prioritize the agencies that are receiving it, and those who are providing the least important function, they may just get cut from the surcharge, and either they will cease to exist or something else. And I said, well, I hate to see them cease to exist. How about we? I'll get some dedicated funds or something. But if they drop off, if they go away, he could see a reassessing of the amount of the surcharge we get and or giving us some additional general funding. So that was the extent of our conversation. I don't know how hopeful that makes me, other than that he's aware of it and the legislature's, you know, aware of the challenge that we're facing.
Bob, can I say something?
Yeah.
I think when it comes to the discussion of justifying the existence of this organization as well, it's going to be important for us, and I know this is a few years down the road, but that gives us time to prepare, I guess. It's going to be important for us to not just say, this is what we've always done.
Right, right. Right.
This, we've been doing this since 1990, what is it, two, three, whatever? When did this come in?
1990.
91. We've always been so important. They want to know, what are you going to do for the next 5 years that justifies you continue doing this? And so,
correct.
We're going to want to have a real clear vision. I mean, part of the mission statement stuff we did at that is helpful to that. But we want to be forward thinking and not, I mean, show our successes, but this is what we plan
right.
to do to help.
And our working with SWAP on best practices, I think we'll underscore that. The fact that this next year, the training committee has met since. I don't want to take the training committee's thunder away.
Go right in.
But this, so this next year is going to be a heavy focus on bias in all of its forms. And so, you know, to underscore what Tyson's saying is we're trying to be proactive and recognizing some concerns, needs that the legislature may have so that we can continue to justify our existence.
It seems like a it kind of seems like a no-brainer and a very easy sell to say it's kind of important that prosecutors are good at doing what they do. Right? That doesn't seem controversial at all to me.
An interesting thing about that, Ed, though, is just yesterday I had a conversation with nobody involved in the criminal justice system about what I do, and they're like, you guys go to training? Yeah. Well, don't you like go to law school for that? Isn't that why you go to law school? And then you just are supposed to know how to do the law. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, yeah, but things change and there's issues that are evolving and the bar requires mandatory CLE and all these things. And this is just a person who's not a lawyer, never been involved in the criminal justice system, and that was their questions to me. Like, I thought that's why you went to law school. Why do you need extra training?
We should be fine if the legislature never met and the Supreme Court made their same decisions, right?
Yeah. I think there's other things that we can tell. I mean, if you look at our death row inmates, I don't think we've ever had an actual innocent one. We've never had one.
Yeah.
We've never executed anyone that's even claimed to be, well,
claimed.
No factual innocence issues.
Since UPC existed, we've solved that problem. How many cases have been overturned on an actual, you know, on a prosecutor error? I don't know the numbers, but they're very, very, very few. If we could pull some of that data with a law clerk, maybe, I think we could really show, all right, other states are having these problems. Look what, since UPC's been in existence, the number of errors not on appeal, the number of overturned convictions, whatever, is almost nothing in Utah.
Right.
That data is, there's about 10 cases a year of prosecutorial misconduct. I mean, it's easy to find.
And you know, the public likes to talk, you know, misconduct, but is it, you know, intentional, willful, harmless error? So, okay, we'll look into that aspect of it as well. So that was Alex's, you know, take on the surcharge. The other, so as I alluded, he's wanting me to track and be able to show successes. And so what we had talked about, as I said, how we measure success from our training is, like, for example, when we read in a case reporter that a prosecutor has called in an expert on trauma who's been able to explain the effects of trauma on a victim, and then there's a positive, you know, a conviction or something, or a prosecutor that's been to one of our trainings realizes that I don't have to have the cooperating victim to get a conviction in a domestic violence trial. I mean, that's a success. But I said, I don't know how I really track that other than asking and sending out surveys, and nobody likes to respond to a survey, I mean, as we know. So we brainstormed an idea that we came up with that you may start seeing on our course evaluations is, in the last quarter, have you called an expert in a particular case? Have you used a trauma-informed expert? Have you taken a case to trial without relying on the victim? I mean, what we do is, you know, get with together with Marlise and Tyson and Ron and Marilyn and see what have we been training on this last year, this last quarter, and ask prosecutors, you know, on their course survey and have Ron figure out some way to make it that they actually have to answer the question or else they don't get their CLE certificate, and, you know, try to track it that way. So you may start seeing that, and if you do see those types of questions, understand that it's in response to legislative affairs wanting to be able to track our success, you know, metrically to report to the legislature.
I don't know that you can track that, because I see success also as being, okay, I've learned something new in this training here, I take it back to my office, and I have an officer who arrested somebody for something, and I say, hey, that's not what the law actually is now.
Right.
And so we cut them loose. That's a success for training.
I agree. I agree with you 100%.
How do you measure those things?
And all I can say is that
there was a jail was measuring it.
Yeah. Yeah, or it's, you know, when we have brand new prosecutors, and the other example I said is, so we get a crop of new prosecutors at our basic prosecutor course, some that have had 7 or 8 months, some that haven't even taken the bar yet, you know, that have just brand new been hired. And so we see success in our course just in a week in their confidence level. You know, I mean, how do we track that? But the writing is on the wall, is all of these agencies, we're going to have to start providing some metrics, some numbers to show success. And so this is what he and I came up with and kind of agreed to. So you're right, it doesn't track every measure of success, every successful thing we do, but I've got to be able to start quantifying something. And he actually wants me to provide it quarterly to him. So yeah, Yvette.
So in West Valley, actually, we report to our city council our evidence-based prosecutions.
Oh.
And when we use experts, so mm-hmm. Ryan actually has numbers.
Perfect.
For the past, since I
okay.
I mean, and we are a 100% UPC trained prosecutor office. So you can, like, I know we're really small, but you at least, there are numbers out there already that may just be a place to start.
Okay.
And I don't know that they're big, but I mean.
Well, no, it's a place to start.
I had two in a quarter.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But we are keeping track. So I don't know if other agencies are, but our city council was.
Okay.
I said, you don't really know what we do.
Well, I think it's important to identify what we can do and a hard number to, right?
Well, sure.
What Stephen's saying, we can't put a hard number to all that stuff, right? But even though that's a huge part of what we do, identifying the areas where we can put a hard number. So if you have any ideas on things that we could track.
Yeah, what about something as simple as on the evaluation form, you know, give us a couple of words on what you learned new or what you're going to do different now that you've been to this training and so.
And we're going to do that as well.
Okay.
That's what CCJJ does, and they're in the same boat, you know, Alex is wanting metrics from them. And so that's one thing they do is, what are the top three things you're going to take from this conference and incorporate? You know, so we're going to start asking that kind of question as well. And as he pointed out, he says, you know, don't you really want to know if you're being successful? And I said, well, yeah. And I mean, I get feedback. This is a great conference, and, you know, I hear from supervisors or whatnot, but he just would like to see some actual numbers, and if it justifies our continued existence with the legislature, then this is what we've got to do.
Well, and I mean, I don't want to put more work on Marlise and Tyson, but I mean, I know they get calls all the time,
mm-hmm.
and maybe when you talk to somebody and they say, okay, I'm going to try that, and you ask them to call you back and how it worked or whatever, or just the fact that they've called and enlightened them, I mm-hmm. think it could be mm-hmm. a...
And I do currently.
I just pulled up my report from my last annual report. I had 782 technical assistants during that year.
Well,
that's over two a day, every single day of the year. And that doesn't even factor in weekends, days off, holidays.
Sure, but were they helpful, Tyson? I'm just kidding.
Is there a way to track access?
Well, one of the only people who's ever come back to me and said, hey, we use that argument at work.
Probably.
No, I know that our folks call you all the time.
Yeah.
In answer to Steve's question, I do provide those numbers to the AG. I will provide that to Alex as well, the number of technical questions. Ryan's question, I hadn't thought about that, as I could go in and look at the types of discussions on the forum, you know, how many people are participating.
I know it's not a huge participation, but that's another measurement of success.
Oh,
is
right,
talking
right.
About this. Let's see what it
right.
I put that on a manual, not topics, but numbers on a manual basis as well for my report.
And Marlee suggested how many times people come to our website. Our website is not as great as I was hoping it to be because we're just short-staffed, but we could probably track that, or at least areas where they're going and looking.
If they log in for the toolbox or whatnot, how many times they're doing that, what are they accessing
right.
while they're in there?
What if you just ask prosecutors?
We've been able to track that.
What if you ask prosecutors, how much do you rely on UPC's training for your practice, or something like that? 95% of prosecutors say it's very important.
Right. And all of this, because I'm not going to send out a survey, that comes up on your email. That's why I'm going to try and include it in our course evaluation, but then I don't want to make it burdensome that all the questions exceed the, evaluation itself. And so, we will work on trying to tailor something that will be useful to us, to you as a council, to the legislature. And I explained that to Alex. As I said, this isn't going to, you're not going to get a response from every prosecutor in the state. He says, no, that's okay. he understands.
One of the concerns I have is that Salt Lake develops their own internal training.
Yeah.
Right, 2-3 a week.
Yeah, you're going to lose a lot of numbers, possibly.
Right.
I wonder if we don't want to start maybe, or UPC want to start working with Salt Lake to at least be able to, on paper, co-op some of those numbers. So they can report them, even if they're not doing much of it.
Yeah.
Well, our fall biannual conference, we collaborate with the Prosecutor Center for Excellence for similar reasons, so that both entities can claim success.
Okay. I think, let me see if there's anything else on. Oh. Okay. That took us into the 2020 legislative session. I had reported previously there was some discussion that Post might be giving up their 18%. That's not going to happen. They're going to hold on to it. We talked already about HB 10 with Representative Roberts. I mean, Will or Jeff, have you actually spoken with him? I mean, does he seem fairly reasonable? We're not really trying to get rid of you, but...
I talked to Robert Sam Thatcher, who's the Senate sponsor. The goal is to make you report. It is not to destroy.
So Tracy Tabbitt had a concern because she and I and Dan Burton in our office have been talking about this. Is her concern is that there's not a repeal mechanism, meaning that what's going to happen come 2024... Will they just pass legislation to say we repeal HB 10 from 2020?
Every year there are bills, the whole function of the bill is to change the year.
Okay.
So that's just how they
I talked to Robertson. I would maybe just spin it a little differently. I think he absolutely is saying what Will is saying, but he's open to the idea of getting rid of some of these entities if they don't really provide a benefit to the
yeah.
state.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So then why don't they take the approach that of requiring the reporting and then the failing to report would put them in that?
I think that's kind of what they're doing, just in a different, slightly different way. I think this is the way the legislature generally does it.
Right. They're not targeting UPC in a different way than they do for any...
Right, no, right, because we're right in the middle of everybody else.
Right.
So what strategies, if any, do we as a council take? I mean, do we have each of the counties call Representative Roberts, Senator Thatcher? Do we bombard them with email, with phone calls? I mean, what's the best way?
You know, the administrative office of the courts had a sunset provision for several years, and it just, I think, 2 years ago struck it, and it was during one of the reports when it was coming up for review, and the court said, look, we'd be happy to come back and report. We feel that we deserve an important function that is not going to become irrelevant. And so I think the legislature just struck the sunset clause instead of changing the year at that point. You could try to do that, but right now at least that's the opposite direction of what they're trying to do with more stories.
Right, and so I get, like I said, so that's my question. What's the best way to get our message out, and who do we get it to, and who does that message come from?
I'm not really worried.